Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Aye, aye. This week, I am talking to the funny and brainy AF comedian Athena Kablenyu. We're just a pair of adults eating some ice cream in the middle of the day because we can do whatever we want to do. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you do me a huge favour, please, and tell other people about it. You can do it on the internet or even to their face now if it's in a garden. One way of telling other people about it is to leave it a 5-star review on whatever thing that you listen to it via. That does help other people find out about the podcast, apparently. And if you've already been doing that, thank you so much. That's the biggest gift you could ever give me. Exciting news. I am in the early planning stages of a virtual live hoovering show with like a panel of guests, and it'll be very interactive and very fun. Tickets aren't on sale yet, and I'll be announcing the guests and a ticket link soon. But secret sneaky news is to get the evening England time of Sunday the 19th of July gently in a gentle pencil into your diary. More information on that coming soon. If you've got any spare money, I reckon give it to a food bank. They are going great guns at the moment. What would we do without them? Well, we're stuffed actually, wouldn't we? Maybe have to just get a better government so that they didn't need to exist. But yeah, please support food banks. If you've got spare money even after that, I've joined a new thing. If you had, say, like a spare fiver and wanted to do a one-off payment on Acast, who put this podcast out for me. So if you go to supporter.acast.com/hoovering, you'll see a little button you can click and give like any one-off amount towards helping the podcast carry on. I'd be very grateful for that. And there's a link obviously in the podcast notes as well. If you wanted to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you'll see like lush podcast related things that I swap in exchange for a monthly amount from you, from tiny to big. For example, some of my patrons will be getting discounted or even free tickets to this virtual Hoovering live show later in the month. Wahoo! Okay, Athena and I met remotely because even though we're both London-based, gardens were complicated at the time and it made no sense with childcare and stuff that day. We met for pudding after our lunches. Some call it pudding, some call it sweet mains. I'm hoping to get sweet mains to stick actually as an alternative to the word pudding. The word pudding is so 2019. And Athena and I were talking over Zoom if there are tiny little delays sometimes between the things that we say to each other.
Your partner's birthday, so you've got some cake in.
Yes, because he's got some two grown-up kids, so that's the best way to do it, because when they're growing up they're useful, isn't it? So yes. His eldest daughter bakes a beautiful lemon drizzle with buttercream and icing and stuff. That was because he went to Tesco's and bought their shitty little cupcakes, and I was like, oh. lovely. So Richard came with a cake. I was like, yes. He said, that popped it up. So yeah, it was that saved the day. That was great.
No one should be left in charge of getting their own birthday cake, because you look like an arsehole if you go big.
He and wouldn't let me do it. He was like, you're going to buy shit cakes. And I was like, well, let's see what a Tesco Express has got for you then, because that's where you win. Do you know what I mean? He was like, you buy shit cakes, you buy shit ice cream. And I was like, all right, then go on then. Buy your cakes.
Are you having ice cream with your cake?
I am. I'm having an Alpro vegan ice cream. Not because I'm vegan, but just because he doesn't eat it. The whole you buy shit ice cream comes from the fact that I bought vegan ice cream once.
And it's been one time.
It's been in the freezer for like a year. He's like, he just nibbles it to humour me. I don't know what, I know he likes it, but he's not eating it to make a point.
Yeah, that happens, doesn't it, actually? It's a power play.
Absolutely.
Is it that Alpro hazelnut one? That's the only one I've seen.
This is a chocolate swirl. It's chocolate and vanilla, because I'm personally a vanilla fan. And a lot of people, because we're brought up on the 5-litre tubs of vanilla from B-Jams, we can't bear, you know, we can't bear vanilla ever again. But I think vanilla, I love vanilla. So I love the smell, I love the taste. So I don't mind a cart door. I'm not above it, you know?
I'm not above a cart door.
Exactly. Isn't there
there's that one called, is it Kelly's? That's really nice.
Kelly's, that blue, that really traditional.
Yeah.
And ice cream. Sorry, my thing, it says crying alert on my monitor, but we'll ignore that.
That's my kind of parenting right there.
I can't hear her crying, so I think she's just making a lot of banging noise.
Yeah,
and the monitor doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
So until I hear the crying, I don't believe the monitor.
Fair play. Yeah,
I don't follow machines.
Now prove it.
Me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is Cornish ice cream, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it tastes like actual frozen cream.
I love it. I mean, I like that brand totally. And I'm not even an ice cream person. I'm not a huge ice cream fan.
No. I'm so sorry then.
No, it's a treat. So I have it like once every now and again for a treat. Mm. But for example, like some people have it like every day or a lot. I like gelato, so I like it on a holiday.
Yeah.
I like my ice cream to taste like kiwi fruit.
Yeah, that's what I really. Oh, nice.
You know when you go to like Rome or Barcelona and you have your ice cream, then you come back home and you think, oh, this isn't ice cream, is it?
This isn't the same.
It's just sugar. Yeah.
It's so true. And are you swanky enough? I'm not, to actually know what the difference between gelato and ice cream is. I thought it was just Italian for gelato, for ice cream.
One's tasty and one's not, you know? Like, that's the only... like, when I go for gelato, I know that the flavours will be really powerful. So if I'm getting, like, a hazelnut and avocado, it's literally going to taste like hazelnut. And it sounds disgusting on paper. Then you eat it and then you're just like, yeah, I'll take it all.
I want it all.
Like, I'll have 17 scoops. Make it happen, man. Make it happen. You know what I mean? Get out your engineer. If it takes five of you, it takes five of you, but I'm not leaving. I want 17 on that cone, you know? Ice cream is just a tub of sugar, isn't it, really?
I think that's why it's like I sort of naively, universally assume it's loved, because I saw something years ago, this documentary about the stuff that makes almost everyone go like, food-wise... or pudding-wise, anyway, is almost 50-50 fat and sugar and ice cream, donuts. There's loads of, like, there's loads of things that meet almost the exact ratio, and that's why they're so delicious.
It's a science, though. It's a science.
Yeah.
And it's a corruption. So I'm genuinely... A few years ago, I just got with this guy. He was like, I don't have to say this to you, Athena, but you eat too much sugar.
Yeah.
And it was before, like, fat shaming, so I rather than have a go, I listened. You know? I was like, you're probably right, actually. And he really educated me on, because he was, you know, he was just very into food and stuff like that, and he really educated me on the addictive faculties of sugar, and also how it's used to manipulate us to be like, oh, this is delicious, but really what they're doing is they're selling us the cheapest possible product for the most possible price and making it so we keep buying it over and over. So
by putting sugar into stuff.
By putting sugar into it, yeah. Mm. And by replacing fat with sugar as well. And so I started to divorce myself from, oh, this is delicious, to like, it's bad.
No,
because this is capitalism. It's capitalism. Just, you always got to see it as capitalism, okay? It's all about them trying to make us addicted to shit. They want us to, like I said, they want us to have the cheapest possible food for the highest possible price, and they want us to be addicted to it. So they sell us food that keeps us hungry. So how is this? This isn't, this is unethical. You're selling me something that won't satiate me. You're selling me drinks that keep me thirsty, right? That's how I keep myself in check. Like, I know my body says it wants this, but I also know it's been designed. So that's why the biggest companies in the world are food companies, Procter and Gamble. And
I'm still really enjoying my ice cream while you're saying all this. It just for me today.
It's like knowledge is power. So whilst you enjoy it, just know you're fighting against capitalism by no, you know, like when you're in a relationship with someone, you know, is an asshole, but you know it, so it's all right. You know, it's like paying your council tax. I know Enfield council ain't fucking shit, right? Picking up my beans once a fortnight. This is, you pay your council tax. It's like that. So you you give them the money, but you have your eyes wide open. That's kind of, but it is, when you think about it, like, if I'm going to be an anti-capitalist, I have to, and still buy trainers and still eat Pringles and stuff. You have to be aware of this kind of
thing. Oh, God, completely. Yeah. Like, I mean, well, 2 points. One, on the kind of like politics side of it, the capitalism side of it, like, obviously that if you put sugar in stuff, it's going to make more people want it. It depends, if you're marketing it to kids and stuff, then you know there's going to be like, people are going to feel like morally compelled just to keep their kid quiet, that they'll get it. Like, 100% agree, there's a dark side to that also. I mean, it was all, it feels terrible to say you can only do what you can do, but it becomes a point of exactly that, going, well, my eyes are open to it. I'm fully aware I'm sucking Satan's cock every time I drink a Diet Coke. But years ago, I remember going to an amazing Mark Thomas show all about Coca-Cola, the brand, and the, like, evil history and all the stuff they're doing in, all over the world, but at the time it was South and Central America kind of, like, taking over. Taking over water supplies, exactly. And there were like Mayan shrines with Coca-Cola bottles in, and babies getting given Coca-Cola because there's no clean water. Like, it's madness. So, and I sat there not really knowing what the show was about, even though it's probably called I'll Stop You Drinking Coca-Cola, and I walked into it with a Diet Coke. And this is years ago, I think I was in my late teens. And I was so embarrassed by the end that I'd, like, hid it. And I didn't drink a Coca-Cola product for 10 years. But the shit I got all the way through that from people going, oh, yeah, because Pepsi are loads better. Or, you know, there'll be some other... Yeah, exactly. While I was doing that, I was, like, driving my petrol car around. Like, you know...
It's hard, yeah, because we participate in it and it's very hard to escape it. The first thing we can do is know about it and then... make changes as and when we can. Coca-Cola strips own so many things anyway, you'd have to boycott Fanta. Fuck off, I'm not doing it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if you're aware, but like in West Africa, I'm from Ghana, like we have all this stuff in glass bottles, right? And it tastes different because they manufacture it over there. So and you know, you and it just tastes delicious. It's delicious. I mean, so you get, you know, Ghanaian Fantas, if anyone's listening has access to where they can get me some Ghanaian Fantas in North London, please send them to me. They're just syrupy and thick, but they're just so nice when they're chilled. And there's something really special about drinking out of a glass bottle, isn't it? It's way nicer.
Yeah.
I love drinking beer out of a glass bottle. That's the best way to have a beer.
Oh, I love drinking beer out of a glass bottle. I don't understand people that ask for a glass when it comes in a glass bottle.
No, I read this, who's that Japanese writer? I can't remember his name, but he has a Wind Up Bird trilogy books, and there's this one of the books, the detective, and there's a detective in there, right? And he spends the whole book just opening bottles of beer and drinking it. But the way he describes this ritual, it's just like, I always had, nice. I got to the point when I was reading this book, I'd have to have a beer.
I knew
he would describe drinking this ice cold beer with, like, a, you know, wet glass outside and the water dripping outside of it and really cold touch, and it's got a little cold rim. You just want a beer. And I lived opposite a Nisa that used to sell cheap San Miguel's. So it was just like God saying, Athena, this is why you bought this house. You can read this book and drink beers all afternoon or evening.
There's something, I think, I can't, like, the idea of a cold beer is such an, like, it's such a distinctive, it's so easy to crystallise, like, what it's going to taste like, how it's going to feel. Like, it's more than just the thing itself, isn't it? It, like, sort of symbolises stopping and relaxing. It symbolises the sunshine in. Like, for me, that's those things that make a cold beer.
It's a Kit Kat for grown-ups. You know? It's just like, take a break. I'm having a beer. Take a break.
Yeah.
And it works on summer's day, and it actually works in winter as well. It's
and there's an it, but there's still an innocence to it, I think, compared to like a gin and tonic or like, isn't it? Like it's still like, oh, you could do that at 3 o'clock and not have a problem and still be in control of your life.
It's rehydration, you know. It's not like I'm doing this to get wavy or because I'm on it. I'm savouring.
I think it's telling actually that I think in kind of a normal day-to-day life, like because I like all different drinks, I kind of really make an effort to mix it up. And but during lockdown, like I've just always made sure I've had beers in.
I think that's the necessary. And I'm not a huge drinker these days. I'm used to drink a lot. My thing is, I always say I've done everything it's possible to do whilst drinking. So I've peaked, you know, what am I going to do next? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't drink so much these days, but I totally agree with you. What I do have in house is beer. I think because it's not, I don't like getting drunk on beer personally. You have to have too much of it. It's not that alcoholic. And it just makes you, you know, you just go to the toilet every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I just think urinating is and drinking is so frustrating. It's like just getting in the way of my drinking. all this urinating. So having too much, and it's a very bloating thing to have, you know, the volume. I feel the same about wine as well. I don't like getting drunk on wine because the volume of it is just, there's just so much you have to drink.
Too much, yeah.
So yeah, that's it. You have some beers in the house, and you enjoy a bottle, and it's lovely. Yeah.
It is so lovely.
I feel like getting one now.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, I've got to do some driving later this afternoon, or I would. You don't drink very much anymore, but like during lockdown, I found, I suppose it's the same with anything, like a lot more aware of, just of everything, like aware of what I'm drinking and aware of what I'm eating and aware of how what I'm eating or I'm drinking make me feel in a way that I'm normally too busy to. And I'm still fucking busy. I think if you've got a kid in the middle of this, it's not like you were reading 10 books a day and... Like, as you well know.
I haven't.
Here we go.
No, I haven't done. I've not done, like, you can't with a kid. That's the one thing you can't do if you've got a kid in there at home is increase your workload.
Dana Alexander told me ages ago that you're an amazing cook. Are you big into cooking?
That's high praise, because I know Dana throws down in the kitchen. I don't know if you know,
she does.
We share a place, and yeah, she throws down. And yeah, we both share a love of cooking, for sure. I love cooking. I cook a lot, and it's...
Yeah.
I think cooking is a life skill. So if I meet someone who says they can't cook, I'd be like, why would you tell people that? That's like telling people you scratch your ass for pleasure. Like, you know, like you might do it, but you wouldn't just bring it out. Like you just scratch your ass for pleasure and leave it there. So people say, well, you know, I can't cook rice. I just think this is not something to be proud of. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Rice is a staple, dude. It has instructions on the back of it. Just follow them.
Yeah.
So it's a life skill. So I love cooking for that reason. And I just think food's great. It's when you've got nothing to offer. And I have in many times in my life, I've had nothing. I've always been able to offer food, you know, that's how we were brought up as well. Like we weren't, you know, when you don't, we didn't, I never, I look back on my childhood and I think, you know what, we never had like nice trainers or we never went to like all-inclusive holidays like all my friends did, and we never did so many things, but I swear to God we always had the most amazing food. Like
that's amazing.
Yeah. So I look back on that and I think I wouldn't exchange that for, I mean, maybe one pair of gazelles, Mum, do you know what I mean? I remember I went to uni, I had never seen frozen sausages before. I didn't know you could buy frozen sausages. That's how sport we were. We didn't have
amazing.
So that's very valuable. That was a very, very valuable life lesson I carry with me almost every day. I hope my kid inherits that too. Maybe she won't.
I hope so. I think it's so funny, isn't it? I don't know how, whether you talk about your kid, or if you say how old your kid is.
Yeah, she's 20. She's getting towards 21 months now.
Nearly two. So yeah, mine's nearly five. I'm desperately like trying to get him to get into cooking, trying like, and if it's something he knows in advance he's going to want to eat, like cake or whatever, then he'll put the graft in. But it's not like I've learned so far, you can't like instill a love of cooking and feeding people. But I think it is sort of, it's in terms of whatever the whatever the culture in your home is in terms of like how you talk about food that someone else has made for you and stuff, that at least I've got down. I feel like he goes, this is delicious, yeah, or, oh, this is awesome, or this is disgusting, or, you know.
Well,
but like,
I want to hear that too. I want to hear, yeah, when my child's been very communicative from day one. I hadn't realised babies are so communicative. When they couldn't do anything, they could push a spoon away, you know. They could be like, no. And it's like, there's nothing. And you know the way they shut their mouths, and there's, you have this idea of saying, well, I'll just overpower them and stick it. No, you can't. You cannot feed a baby something a baby doesn't want to eat. Please, that mouth goes, and then the face goes to the left, to the right. They will backflip. They will do things they're not physically capable of doing. And it will be like, it's an olive, it's a carrot, it's a bit of broccoli. It's not worth it, but it's worth it to them. So I don't mind when she says, I don't like this, because I like
fair play,
because it's a challenge to me. I'm like, you go and like it, but also it's like, it's having opinions, isn't it? It's her going, oh, this, I don't like this texture, or I like that texture, I don't like this color. I think there are things I don't like, you know. So you know, as long as she, you know, as long as it's not all the time, she's not spitting.
Oh well, yeah, I mean, there's, yeah, I was gonna say, like, I completely agree in theory, but actually when three times a day you've cooked something for someone who's gone, this is disgusting for me, this is horrible, you, and I think I'm there going, doing that thing where you try and go, well, I'm really enjoying it, I like the way it tastes a little bit like smoky, and he'll go, yeah, for you, for me, it's horrible.
That's quite articulate, but when you know, that's, this is what people are like, you know, articulate kids are good, they're not, you know, like,
yeah, they're precocious.
It's better if they don't know the words, it's better if they just go, no thank you,
yeah.
I find this disgusting, you're insulting me, like, how you know that word?
Just learn the compliment words.
It's objectionable, mummy. Just like, no, let's not read ever again. Yeah, stop with that. It's making you too rude.
It's such a point. Such a good point. Oh, I thought of a new question that I'm going to ask people. Are there any foods or drinks that you hate that most people love?
Oh, God, that's an excellent question.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I don't like creamy things.
Oh, that's interesting. So, but you are into vanilla ice cream.
So this is where it gets to. I'm quite fussy about my creamy thing. So for example, ice cream I can deal with, but whipped cream, like if someone had like, you know, like cream, that squeezy cream you used to buy,
into your mouth,
like, you know, just generally whipped cream, don't like it at all. Unless it's in a profiterole, then it's allowed. Okay, I don't like single cream. So, single cream, in no circumstances will I have single cream.
Just as in like a runny white liquid poured straight onto it. No, yeah, no, you've done it. If you're listening, Athena's just done a really funny face.
It's like vomit inducing. And generally, if I'm someone serve it, like custards, I'm not a custard person. Creme brulee, I'll eat it. But don't serve me custard. So when it comes to creamy taste, I'm a bit of a fussy eater. There are some things I won't accept. And people find that odd, but you just have to accept that comes with me. Do you know what I mean?
I get it. I think that comes with lots of people. Also, I love how clearly you know your own mind. And now it explains a bit more, like, that when your daughter doesn't like something, you're like, it's a challenge. Because you know she might not like broccoli one day, but the next day maybe you'll roast it and do you know what I mean? You're like, I'm going to do this in every incarnation until I find the one you like it in.
Yeah.
I love it. Is your kid good? Is she a fan of eating? Have you found that right? Rocky road so far.
She's a good eater. She's a good eater. I'm very. I'm lucky. The girl sleeps. The girl eats. You know,
it's a dream.
I'm lucky. And she not only eats, she tends to eat. From the beginning, she never liked baby food. She liked to eat what we ate. So I lived in my mum's house for a year, and my mum would cook. My mum's Indo-Guyanese, but she lived in Ghana for a long time, so we eat Ghanaian and Indian. We eat everything basically. And my daughter would look at her food and look at my food and just be like, no. What the fuck is this Ella's Kitchen shit? You know, like, it might be well branded, but this is not for me. And, you know, whilst I'm sat with my sort of fried fish and my pumpkin and my roti and my spinach stews and, and whatever, my okra. So, and she would, and so she would literally not eat her dinner, and then we'd be able to spoon our dinner into her and she'd eat that, and we were just like, it's fine by me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I get to prepare one meal now. So I think that's just because I don't know why she turned out that way. I think because we always ate around her, and she was with me a lot for a long time. So she was always with me whilst I was eating. I did a lot of lunches and brunches, blah, blah, blah. So I guess she just ended up thinking she was a grown up. Do you know what I mean? She spent so much time with me and with her grandma in those early years. She just was like, you know, so she's just going to go to school and look at school dinners and she's going to be right arsehole about it. Like, not, you know, she just, literally yesterday for her dinner, she had fucking pan-fried salmon and aloo roti, which is like a potato roti. And I was thought, you're not going to take your school dinners, are you? You're not going to have no fucking alpha spaghetti or whatever they give them these days. So you're going to call Jamie Oliver up and be like, excuse me.
I've just been offered a Twizzler and someone needs to know. That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it? I remember my kids' nursery does like a hot meal at lunchtime, and I had been like making him all stuff at home and he'd been eating it really well, and then there was one time where I said, I don't think he was even 1 year old, and I was like, can I ask what he's had for lunch? And they were like, yeah, he's had hoops and a cupcake. I was like, what? And I realized that at nursery every day, and I had the same thing. I was like, I don't think, you know, I think he's gonna want this beautiful home cooked food full of flavor, and actually he's like, no, just he's happily smashing back the nuggets.
And it's like they see the other kids eating it, and then they come home and they look at your curry and they're like, what the hell is this?
I know. So, well, like the amount of people I've spoken to on this podcast who were as adults realized an incredible thing it was to have a parent or parents who cooked amazing food for them at home, but actually at school when that was their packed lunches they were embarrassed of it because you just want to be like everyone else, I suppose.
It's very much a minority experience when your mates come round and your mum's made fufu and you think, oh my god, and if you don't know what it is, you'll be like, you think it's plasticine, right? You know, if you genuinely don't know what it is, it's basically, I don't know if you know, but it's just mashed up carbs. It's like mashed potato, but very smooth, and it's so smooth, and so you basically pick it up with your hand and you eat soup with it. It's like a massive dumpling, if I can describe it that way.
Amazing. Ruby Tando's got a wicked recipe for it that I was going to try making, but I've never had it before. It sounds incredible.
It is, but you know, when you're in your 12 years old, you just want fish fingers and sausages and whatever, and that's, you know, a lot of that is just tribal, isn't it? You don't want to feel different, you want to feel the same as everyone else, so a lot of it is just your natural urge to not be rejected by the people around you.
And were you, so you talked a bit about eating growing up, but were you cooking as well as being well fed?
So my mum is Indian, so I'm a girl, so I was put to work I was put to work, which is again, a blessing in disguise, because now it's my brothers constantly, how do you make this, how do you make that, tell me how you, you know, so which is a shame actually, because I think when you come from a very patriarchal society, like something is denied from the men as well, that's something that's denied to the women, right? So I was probably denied a little bit of freedom because I had to come home maybe early to cook or had that responsibility. And my brothers have been denied like that connection to their culture because it wasn't like forced into them, you know, and they weren't going to volunteer themselves into the kitchen. So that's a bit of a shame. But I was made to cook early. I was a little sous chef, you know? I was a sous chef, but my mum did. I've got a twin brother, and we did bake. We used to bake most Sundays. We do that together.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to do. It's weird. You're right. It's just hard to get your kids to love food and cooking because it's hard to get your kids to love anything. They like what they like.
Exactly. You don't get as much say as you'd like over their personality, ultimately, is it?
But it's not a checkbox, is it? You can't just be like, yeah, I'll take these characteristics. Thank you, God.
I wanted a fat, stagnant baby that barely moved. I wanted, like, obviously a happy one. I wanted a really gentle boy. boy, got a really violent one. I wanted like one that's really sort of into cooking. And but do you know what? At least now he's old enough to have that one. You have the conversation where if he's not interested in helping you in the kitchen that day, there's no point pushing it. There's no point raging over it, getting into a fallout about it. But also, he's getting old enough that I can have that conversation of going exactly like you're just saying about, you know, I don't want him to miss out on something because he's happy just sitting there getting it done for him. Yeah. Because ultimately, I was like, you're going to have more friends and lovers and people love you if you can, because it's a way of giving and showing love, like ultimately feeding people. It's like you're gonna, it's going to enrich your life in a thousand different ways if you bother trying to get confident with this.
Food is offering. When people, there are so many stories about, you know, when you want to bribe someone, you cook for them. You know what I mean? When you want to ask someone's forgiveness, up and you cook for them. When you want to show someone you love them, you cook for them. You know, it's just like, as well as it just being a day-to-day reality of you got to eat to live, right? So it goes from this ordinary banality to this incredible show of emotion. And it's so, again, that's part of that. Like, if you've got that life school, you get to show that, you get to sustain yourself on a basic level, or you get to like really impress someone, and all you've needed is flour and water and butter. You know what I mean? You know, you've got a chapati. So it's like not, I don't know if my daughter's going to like cooking, but I know that she's going to, I just want her to have the fundamental skill. And if it becomes something that she becomes passionate about, as long as she can just feed herself, I think that's all I can ask of her. But yeah, my mum, because a lot of it was just like, my mum cooked everything, and she cooked everything from scratch, and she was keen to learn how to cook, to the point where, like, we probably had more home-cooked British food than my friends with British-born parents, right? Because my mum had made a real effort to buy all that Mary Berry and Good Housekeeping cookbooks.
So really, did she?
We've got this wonderful collection of 70s cookbooks from when my mum got really settled in this country.
And, oh, really? Yeah. Like the Hamlin all-colour cookbook and all of those, like, classics?
And it's all what, like, pies and roast recipes and cakes and breads and cake decorating. And it's very old school, but we were brought up in that. So I remember, like, we used to make steak and kidney pies, and we used to buy all the kind of offal and all this stuff, which obviously I don't eat meat anymore, but you know, I got, you know, I was brought up on that. And I think because we always saw that process as a family, me and my brothers, we were genuinely appreciative of it. We never found it boring or dull. It was just me that had to do the cooking, unfortunately.
Damn you, patriarchy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I was an only child, and my dad did all the cooking when I was little, but it was only there at weekends. But it wasn't like my nana did some showing me how to make things. Basically just scrambled eggs though, and the base for a white sauce, like a roux.
If you can make a roux, do you know how many other things you can make? Do you know
exactly
you could do mac and cheese, fish sauce, you know, so stuff
just
like that.
I was thinking that the other day, totally. Like loads
make
of
a white sauce, you're sorted.
Is that a level of creaminess you can cope with, a white sauce?
I'm very fussy about white sauces. So I use soy milk. I won't use normal milk to make a white sauce.
Are you vegan?
No, I'm not. No, but no. I think as a consequence of liking cream, I have a lot of non-dairy alternatives in my life. And I think vegans are right. So, you know, I honour that with non-dairy. They are fucking right. Well, they are. I have to argue with them, bloody hell. I'm like really thick, and I never have a right sauce on its own, so it will always have cheese in it, or like I'll always put make it really herbal. I really love stirring spinach into a white sauce.
Never done that.
Make it nice and thick, and stir spinach like really irony, and it's just quite nice with if you have a fishy pasta,
Add
it with fish and makes it with pasta. It's like a really quick dish. So my white sauces are never just white sauce.
Oh, that sounds so good. Yeah. I've just eaten the mac and cheese with cauliflower in it. I made yesterday, or I'd get that on my list to do again soon. Remember the favourite trick I ever learnt with making a white sauce that you're going to do with something like fishy pasta or fish bake is to poach the fish, especially any smoked fish, in the milk, and then use that milk in the roux. Afterwards.
Oh yeah, of course. That's lovely. Yeah, that's lovely. And it makes total sense. Just like it just gets the full flavour in it, because milk and butter and flour, it does not taste of anything. So it's that sounds delicious. I'm gonna remember that. That's it. Yeah.
Were you stressed out during was there ever a patch during lockdown where you couldn't get hold of the stuff you wanted to if you were big into cooking? Like the flour, there was flour issues and eggs
and
issues, weren't
I've
there?
I had a real beef with the flour situation, because I use a lot of flour. I make a lot of dumplings, I make a lot of pancakes. I've said roti about 50 times already, because I make a lot of roti.
Oh, really?
And bacon. So I'm very much a leftover. So I make a lot of carrot cake and banana cake. So I'm a flour. I have flour. And as a consequence, I had maybe 3 or 4 bags in my cupboard anyway, because I use it a lot. So when I went back to the shops to do a re-up, and I there wasn't any there, I thought, these people. I just thought, if you just started baking in the last 8 weeks, you should shield. You know what I mean? You shouldn't be, because you're ruining it for the rest of us. You know, you're late. Yeah. Some of us was about this life, okay? Some of us was about this life. And what you're doing is you're denying an addict their supply. You're new to this. But I was genuinely, flour, what are you fucking doing? Because my 3 bags of flour, even as someone who bakes a lot, will last me a fairly long time.
What are
these people doing? Oh my God.
Yeah.
And what would be worse was when people would make their sourdough bread, fuck it up and put it in a bin. It's like, so not only are you buying all this flour, you're making shit bread with it. No, stop it. No. I was very emotional about that. The eggs, there are lots of things you can use as alternatives to eggs. Whilst I thought, again, I don't know what you guys are doing, you know, you could make a nice cake with 3 eggs. Why I can't buy one in the supermarket is beyond me. I thought it was Greg's. I was like, this is a conspiracy. It's not humans doing this on an individual basis. It's someone out there. You know when people do world record attempts to make the world's largest pancake and the pancake
sells
the market? I thought some arsehole was doing that. It got that bad. And it's like, really, during lockdown? During time?
For Greg's to sponsor the world's biggest pancake competition.
It was mad. And the yeast thing as well. I mean, and I rarely use yeast. And because I use baking soda. But guess what? You couldn't buy no baking soda either. Don't worry. I had some baking soda anyway, guys. So I didn't need it. But I would still look to see if the supermarket had any, so I could be really pissed off that it didn't. Do you know what I mean? I could just be like, you guys are mad. But I think it's, I don't know if it's calmed down. Actually, did you notice the supermarket started selling 20 kilo bags?
Yeah.
Did you notice that? I mean,
I'm quite into that. I've always bought, the amount of times, I feel bad whenever, especially during now, but always, I think basically I've got a little bit of a supermarket addiction. And it doesn't have to be a big supermarket, but at least once a day I go into some food shop. I couldn't give a fuck about shopping generally. And I'll think of one small thing that I want, but I've realised that what I'll do is to appease, sort of, is that the right word? To appease my guilt at that, because I know I'm going in just to get like one thing I don't really need. If they've also got like massive bags of basmati rice,
I'll hoik that
over the shoulder. Like, never, like, got 5 kilograms of stuff like lentils, rice. I love getting a like massive bag of.
Is like, I've only ever bought bulk. I was put up on a bulk buying thing. However, the reason I won't do it for flour is if I buy one bag of flour and I put it in my cupboard, which is what I do, my flour cupboard is a flour cupboard. There's flour, it's everywhere, you know. It's like, and I bake and the flour is everywhere. And it's all over. I can't imagine what one of those bags of flour would do to my home. Like, I just cannot. It looked like a fucking Santa's grotto by the time. So I feel like you don't need that much flour. Rice is very, you know, you know what we use? We had years and years ago, we did some painting and decorating, and we got like, you know, those paint, it's like a massive paint bucket, and it literally fits about 10 kilos of rice in it. So we just decant it. We cleaned it, obviously. So we decant it into this huge paint bucket, and it works great. But with flour, I just think the idea of pouring 20 kilos of flour into another bucket, it would just be like a nuclear flour dust storm.
Yeah, well, it's one of the most pervasive dusts, isn't it? It just gets everywhere. Like talc, yeah. No, no thank you, big bags of flour. At least do them in sturdier buckets. I wonder whether I should... you don't have to answer, but would you say you'd always had an uncomplicated or simple relationship with eating, or has it ever been?
Yes, I have it now, but I think I was an overeater as a younger person. Massively so. When you grow up in a household where you just have the most, you know, it's just I'm very lucky. I always say that people say like mixed race kids are like really pretty. We're not. We're as busted as you are. However, fusion food is pretty much the cuisine that is the most delicious cuisine in the world. It's always the cuisine that's been informed by different cultures. It's just no coincidence that the best tasted food is the food that's been influenced by the people. And I grew up in a household of Caribbean, African and Indian food, and that's native to me. I can claim all of that as authentic. So I grew up with, you know, and of course then I had a mum who then had to make British food, and she then had to, so that's, of course I was an overeater, and she was a feeder, right? So
but what do you mean overeating though? Because what, beyond the point of fullness?
Yeah. Comfort eating.
But for fun.
It's always fun until you reflect in it and you think, oh, that wasn't fun. Do you know what I mean? And then I went through a stage of like, if I was bored, I would eat. If I was not bored, I would eat. I would just eat. And we always, not only did we have like the really good, wholesome, made from scratch stuff, we also had a house and we had like donuts and, you know, big loaves of fresh white bread and jam and all that, ice creams and all that stuff. And I think as I got older, you know, when you're young, you tend to get assigned a personality, and then it becomes all about filling that in and just living up to it rather than saying, actually, no. So I was always the Athena will eat that. You know, I was that one. Athena will eat that. Oh, Athena, there's an eating competition. Before Man versus Food, it was like, you know, Athena will have 2 pizzas and blah, 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 blah. So after I don't even know what made me reflect on it. I just one day I just thought I don't want to eat all the time.
I don't feel very nice.
And I got it was I went and I got away. You know, you get older and you get away, and all of a sudden you don't have to be that person anymore. It doesn't mean I don't eat for pleasure anymore, but and then I guess maybe I went the other way. Like, you should never weigh porridge, guys. When you start weighing your porridge, It's
life's over. I couldn't agree more. I think it's an unhappy road, isn't it? It's just obsessive.
And who gives a shit? Am I sponsored by Adidas? I don't fucking care. So that, you know, it's just. But it was more. I don't know what that was about, really. I don't.
Such a nice, happy, simple story. And now I don't.
It isn't simple as that, though. It is.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
There've got to be lots of things as well there, haven't there, to do with like where you, I don't know, where as a kid we do things in kind of manic ways. So beautifully put that we're assigned a personality. It's so true, isn't it? And Yeah, and I think especially if it sounds like, you know, in a house full of food. I had a parent who my dad's kind of main, if only way really of showing love was to feed. So I kind of ate non-stop as a kid, and it was that, like, he'd be like, can I get you something else? 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 And I'd be like, yeah. And then, but that was also mixed with, like, from him, and a little bit from my mum, but especially from him, like, a visceral hatred of fat people.
Oh, no,
But so it was very confusing. It was like, oh, so you definitely want me to eat this.
Yeah.
But you're not going to like the consequences. So I don't like, it's always, and I think that's been the root of my complicated relation, all of the complications in my relationship with eating. I think it sounds like a much happier, simpler thing to have at some point during adolescence or adulthood gone, oh, I don't want to. No one should ever eat when they don't want to. Do you know what I mean? And actually realising that sometimes you were and going, yeah, I didn't want that.
No, I can relate to that. I wouldn't say that my mum was something like, oh, you can't be fat, or, you know, anything like that. But she, you know, she definitely would comment on my size. I was a sort of a chubby kid, but not as chubby as I thought I was. So I look back
on
pictures of me now and I'm like, oh, I wasn't as fat as I thought I was. But in my memory, I just remember like a much bigger kid, and I don't, you know, all that stuff's, you know, in your head. But my mum was a feeder, so she'd comment maybe on my size, but then she'd be like, have another sausage or whatever. But I think that's also to do with, we're really educated. They had their issues as well, every generation issues, but also, like, we're really educated about food in a scientific way that I don't think people, you know, a bit older than us, maybe a generation above us, were, because it was just a case of, you could, because I think food was less corrupted, you could just take it for granted. You could just eat and live and have and be healthy, whatever healthy is for your genetic body type, so to speak.
Yeah.
Whereas you can't do that. You couldn't do it. You fucking couldn't do it in the 90s. Not with you know, Iceland's selling their shit, and not with, you know, the cut.
But that's the other thing that I feel like you don't, that generation up, or maybe even a bit older, I don't know, but they certainly, it's like when processed food came out and was cheap, people were like, this is amazing. They didn't realise that that's going to be full of, like, loads of extra salt and sugar and, you know, the stuff that, like you were saying, I don't know, I'm very sceptical about whether things can actually be addictive, but it depends on what your philosophy is on the nature of addiction, full stop, I suppose. But certainly in terms of, like, unsatisfying and not nutritionally as good for you as
if you
made it yourself, you know.
It's carcinogenic. It's carcinogenic. It's carcinogenic. Do you know what I mean? This is what we're being fed with. You can go on, I don't know the term of the word, but there's an organisation, it's like the International Cancer Organisation. So it classes everything. So it just says asbestos is carcinogenic, tobacco is carcinogenic, processed meat is carcinogenic. This is scientific fact. Going back to what I was saying earlier, like, the food industry is really corrupt. You know, they have no, they're not interested in feeding us or satiating us. They're just interested in our money. That wasn't common knowledge in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And that definitely led to the contradictions that we were perhaps brought up with, in, like, eat this.
Think as well, like, that things go in fads like that as well? Because the food industry, in cahoots with different governments and in cahoots with the diet industry, are so actually full of shit that we seem to get waves of information that we accept as knowledge. So, like, I don't know, I think you're a bit younger than me. When we were at school, fat was bad. Like, fat was really bad. Yeah. And if you're going to go on a diet, you'd cut out all fat. And now it's like, no, it's sugar. It's sugar that's bad. Like, I'm not saying I don't believe it, or I don't, you know, I don't think everybody's mad. Somebody somewhere along the line's got to be right. But I still have this bit of my mind that thinks, whatever, my son's a teenager, it will turn out that it was actually water that was killing us.
I'm going to say something. Listen to Dr. Athena, all right?
Here we go. This is kind of a friend.
let me put my breast away and I'll be a proper doctor, because, like, I see them sneaking out again. that would make me less of a doctor, by the way. If you were a doctor with your breast out...
I would love to go see a doctor who had a tit out, whether she'd just been feeding her kid or not.
Right, Dr. Athena, we get told things, okay, in all walks of life about all kinds of topics. We get told this is bad, this is good, this is bad. But there are fundamental truths, okay, that are always going to be above what anyone says, what Dr. Hillary Jones says, if he's still around, you know, what anybody says. And the fundamental truth about fats and sugars is that they are both good for you, but there are different kinds of fats and there are different kinds of sugars. And the general rule is stay away from refined sugar, okay, and stay away from what they call trans fats or saturated fats, and you'll be all right. And that is those are the only two things you need to know. And everything else is bullshit. And then on top of that, the most boring thing that we all say is actually the most correct thing, everything in moderation. And all of the noise around food and diet and science is fucking bullshit. If it doesn't say either of those two things, it is designed to promote or sell something we don't need. It is designed to protect something that we don't need, but they want us to keep buying.
It's true.
Science has never changed. It's been the same since we walked out of the caves.
I agree. I think you're making a totally valid point. I think just for the sake of a tiny bit of devil's advocacy, and in the same thing with the start.
I'm not a real doctor either.
But I've just spoken to so many people about eating now, and I just think in terms of how we best serve our health. Especially as women, and especially as inclusive of mental health, is I think there is sometimes potential dangers in talking about things like sugars as being bad or evil, and talking about moderation only in the sense that having that in mind can sometimes lead to the same disconnect from your actual intuitive hunger, fullness, all the ways in which, do you know, and that's what moderation is. I think what I'm saying is someone else's moderation might be very different. Don't judge other people on their moderation, because you don't know where someone is there in their hormonal cycle. You don't know how hungry that person is. You don't know what their metabolism's like. You don't know, they might have just had a shit day and they need to feed emotionally. They might, do you know, I'm just saying, I agree in terms of the moderation thing, but also I think so often that everything in moderation slogan comes with such a fucking sea of judgment and therefore shame that I'm careful around that language. I think that's my point.
I agree with you. So I'm gonna refine that point. I'm gonna say don't overthink it.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't agree more. I mean, says the person who's done a whole podcast about it, but basically don't overthink it. It's exactly it.
If you want to eat it, and if you don't eat it, don't eat it. And then if you feel bad after eating it, think about why you feel bad. But then don't eat it either. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And also, even if you feel like shit after eating it, it's like, well,
that's the nature of life. You can't feel nature of life. Shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not a big deal. But don't overthink it is the main thing. And we have to teach ourselves how to identify behavior that is harmful to us.
Yes.
That's just such a fundamental life. It's so important. And I can't tell anyone. It's the judgmental thing you said is really important. I can't look at somebody and say, you should do this more or you should do this less. But what I want people to do is to be empowered themselves, so they don't harm themselves in whatever way that is. There's no denying that if you drink 2 liters of Coke, which is a massive extreme, and people don't do this, it's not a great example, but if you do that every day, you are harming yourself, right? So where, as long as you know where the line is between relief, emotional indulgence, fun, celebration, enjoyment, discipline, you know, all this clean eating stuff is even more harmful. There's fucking Instagram people telling you to fast for 5 days straight and drink nothing but
fuck
water.
Off.
Do you know what I mean?
Fuck
this is just
off.
As dangerous to me.
Yeah.
And they're walking around with their highly dehydrated bodies showing off all their muscles. It's like, have a fucking pint of water, mate. Damn. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Eat a donut. This is not great. And then walking around like this. So it's not... it's not great, but don't overthink it. I'll adjust that to that, because you're absolutely right. Yeah, don't overthink it.
Yum in my tongue.
A huge giant goat the size of a hotel starts smashing all the houses and drinking all the sea and nibbling everyone's roofs off, and it's pandemonium. It's agreed to shrink back and stop it, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, Athena, blow up 890 paddling pools all by yourself. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're the hero of all people forever and ever and ever. Your prize is a place in history as the woman who saved us all from the goat and death. And but your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. And the point of having blown up all the paddling pools is that I want you to be like starving. I don't want this. It's not a last meal. This is the happiest you've ever felt. This is the first of many meals. It's a celebratory, but also you are hungry. So I'd love to know, in that happy, hungry situation, if anything was possible and nothing had any consequences, what would be your most favourite dream things to eat and drink? And if there's a who, with and where, then who, with and where? And none of these answers have to be possible.
All right. Well, first of all, I don't eat meat anymore. However, if I did...
No consequences.
Listen, if I did, it would be that goat, you know.
Yeah.
Goat meat is really good. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like a nice goat curry, rice and peas, macaroni cheese on the side. Yeah.
Oh.
But I don't eat meat anymore. So the goat.
Okay.
The goat is very lucky. I'm the right person to have chosen for that challenge. Oh, that's a wonderful question. It would be. It would be definitely. I mean, it would be dal roti, which is a roti with lentil dal in the middle of it that has been pre-cooked. It's very nice. So I'd have that with a fish curry because the dal soaks up the curry. So you eat it with your hands. You're supposed to eat it and with a good fish curry. And it would be salmon. It would be salmon, that fish curry, with a bit of white fish because salmon is quite rich. What's on the side? Oh, I don't know if you know what bakes are, but bakes are like a Guyanese semi-savoury, semi-sweet dumpling. And they're quite large. They're like a savoury donut. And again, you take your bacon, you put your curry inside it, and you eat it. And that's like, you know, this. What else can I say?
Lush.
Lovely. Some cold beer. How can I not ask for a cold beer on the side after a conversation, after that conversation with that?
Have you got a favourite cold beer?
Do you know what? I genuinely don't. I wish I was a beer connoisseur. I'm not really. I'd have it'd be like something shit like a Kronenbourg or a Heineken.
Nice.
You know, I tend to ask for Heineken's. Like I said, a San Miguel earlier.
Yeah, nice.
And a Shai. Is that how you say the Japanese
beer?
Yeah,
Asahi. Lush.
But I'm not a huge beer connoisseur, unfortunately. I just thought, if I've heard of it, I'll drink it. Oh, I tell a lie. Okay, Star Lager. It's a Ghanaian lager.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. You can imagine, because the reason why these countries have great drinks is because they're hot countries.
Yeah.
So they're brewed and made to service a particular kind of climate. So they're just a little bit more... So Star Lager is a nice one. It probably tastes similar to one of these ones that we know.
Love it.
Who would I have it with? Oh, Ashley Joshua. Why not? I eat my partner every day, so what's the point? I'd have had to around, isn't it? Like, just
didn't expect you to say that. Why not mix it up a bit? Let's just get rid of fit boxer in.
I hear he's very good company. I've heard his conversation is sublime. You can't drink baby oil, but I'm ordering baby oil as well. Just in case it comes in handy for the conversation.
For the conversation. Amazing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. Genuinely. I could talk about food all day. Genuinely.
Oh, I loved it.
What a funny and fascinating wonder Athena is. Massive thanks to her for doing the podcast. Follow her, please. Her Twitter handle is Athena Kublenu. It's AthenaKublenu. And check out her podcast. She has a podcast called Keeping Athena Company. I know there's a link through her website, but I'm sure it's findable through all the usual podcast places where she eats plantain and puts the world to rights with one guest at a time. I mentioned it at the beginning, but I've joined this Acaster support thing. Go to supporter.acast.com/hoovering and you'll see where you could help financially to keep the podcast ticking ticking over and growing and bettering. Get the Sunday the 19th of July in the evening in your diary, because I'm hopefully doing a very snazzy Hoovering Live on the internet with some really spangly guests. More details on that soon. Just keep listening and keep an eye on our social medias to keep up to date with that. The podcast is at The Hoovering Pod on Instagram and Twitter and on Facebook. Subscribe, give us a 5-star review. Follow me if you like, at Jessica Foster Q. Got anything longer than a tweet to send me? You can do it through my website, jessicafosterq.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.